We always love having Noah Ovshinsky with us. He's our news guy, assistant news director at WPR. He's here for his weekly roundup of the top news stories in Wisconsin. Noah, welcome back.
It's good to be here. Are you sure you don't want to talk about love?
I don't know. I've got a lot to say. No, I'd love to talk about Wisconsin news instead.
All right.
One of the big stories, the State of the Tribes address this week, and I should put in a plug, that is archived at WPR.org. If you missed the speech, you can check it out there. Paint us a picture, Noah. What was at stake in the speech?
Right. So this is an annual address that a representative of the tribes here in Wisconsin give to the legislature. And in this case, it was Menominee Chairwoman Lori Bovine who delivered the address. And it's one of those speeches that generally avoids highlighting the disagreements between the tribes themselves. And this address really was no different. I would also note that it was also a bit less critical of the legislature than it has been in the past. Last year, Lacouturay then-chairman Gordon Thayer criticized Republican lawmakers over at the time, which was the new mining law, mm-hmm. which they had recently passed, that paves the way for the very controversial new iron ore mine in the Pinokies, which his and other tribes were fighting at the time. So this had a slightly lighter tone than last year.
Well, when we think of politics and the tribes and the state, one of the words that pops into our minds is casinos. How big a deal was that in the speech?
So, of course, this was one of the biggest issues the tribes and, in fact, the state are dealing with right now. And she didn't really mention it. She largely avoided the issue altogether. She is a member of the tribe which is pushing for this casino, the Menominee. And as I mentioned, you know, they try to avoid issues where the tribes disagree strongly. And the Ho-Chunk and the Potawatomi, who already run casinos in the state, have fought the construction of this casino. So again, a very controversial issue within the tribes. She didn't mention it, or barely mentioned it, I should say.
Before we get into what was in the speech, where does that casino issue sit now? We're in a kind of a holding pattern, right?
We are. We're waiting on the governor, and the timeline has shifted. The decision whether or not this casino is ultimately going to be built really lies with the governor, and he hasn't said whether he supports it or not, and really the timeline just sort of keeps on getting longer.
So what did she focus on in the address?
Right. So she focused on another controversy that popped up in the legislature having to do with the tribes this year. And that was the new law that Republicans in the state legislature pushed that makes it harder to force school districts to drop their Native American mascots. You know, she had indicated that she'd hoped the tribes and the state could come up with some sort of compromise. But that was not the case.
So what ended up happening with that law? Where are we now?
Right. Well, you know, Bovine pointed out that, you know, in the court of law, you know, people aren't required to file a petition to prove that discrimination has taken place. And just to remind you, under this new law, 10% of the student body has to actually sign a petition in order to trigger a review, to even get the process going. You know, and she notes that, you know, in the court of law, petitions aren't needed to prove discrimination.
So the bar is much, much higher to prove discrimination in a Native American-themed school mascot.
Exactly, yeah, much, much higher.
So the tribes fought this law as it was going through. After the address, did we get a sense of the response from the Republican majority to what she had to say?
Right. Well, afterwards, Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald, you know, did acknowledge that the mascot issue was a very complex one. And he, in fact, said of the new law that he didn't know if it will be, quote, the silver bullet forever. So, you know, who knows? It may change in the future. We'll see. But obviously, the fact that this was talked about in the address means that it was and continues to be a big issue for Wisconsin's tribes.
But with not much time left in the legislative session, we could probably predict that the law won't change very soon.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, other big news, and I know we had Chuck Kornbach running out to cover this week, the Archdiocese of Milwaukee had declared bankruptcy sometime back. Mm-hmm. They came out with a reorganization plan that was required by the courts. Can you give us an update on what happened there?
Right. So this plan has been in the making for, well, basically since they filed for bankruptcy in 2011. And that was really, they filed under the weight of, you know, all the lawsuits the Archdiocese faced related to child sexual abuse by clergy. And this plan, which a lot of people were waiting for, includes a lot of things. Among other things, it includes $4 million for victims and an additional pot of money That will be set aside for therapy costs for victims.
And that was really what people were watching for in this reorganization plan, was what compensation would be there for victims of abuse.
Exactly. That's really it. And it's still controversial. Archbishop Jerome Listecki called the plan a major step toward ending the bankruptcy. In fact, he indicated in interviews after the plan was put forward that he hoped the plan would allow the church to, you know, focus on its mission, which is proclaiming the gospel and doing much what the church does on a day-to-day basis, which is, you know, among other things, helping the poor. And that, you know, filing this reorganization plan was one step forward in getting back to that mission.
Well, the people watching this most closely were the people who were involved in the lawsuits in the first place. What was their reaction?
Right. Well, as you suggested, many of the survivors, the victims, are deeply disappointed by that $4 million figure. In fact, if you were to look at it, it would be among the lowest, if not the lowest settlement among the archdioceses around the country that have filed for bankruptcy as a result of this abuse by clergy. So I think they were all hoping it would be a much bigger number than $4 million.
It's not a done deal yet, as I understand it. This needs court approval, right?
Right. It was just submitted to the court. Now it's up to the judge to decide whether or not they're going to accept this plan.
And I don't think this is the sort of thing where we have a rock-solid timeline of where we're going to see the next step.
No, that's totally up to the judge.
All right. Well, moving on to the legislature itself and what they've been up to. One of the things that got a lot of attention, some cities in Wisconsin have living wage ordinances that could be challenged, at least under one proposal. Can you tell us about that?
Right. So this was something that really popped up really quickly this week, actually. The bill sponsor, State Representative Chris Kapinga, really brought this to the fore here in a matter of days, had a hearing very quickly. And he says he was pushed to act after the Milwaukee County Board voted to increase the minimum wage for contractors there to $11.32 an hour. Now, the city of Milwaukee, Madison, and Dane County already have higher minimum wage ordinances. So this was just, you know, the newest one, the latest one to happen, or at least the latest one to be voted on by the board. Now, critics have called this attempt by Kapinga really an attack on local control, that it shouldn't be up to Madison to decide how much counties and cities should pay contractors. And Kapinga points out in his defense that this will only affect projects which are paid for using state and federal money. It won't affect the money that the counties or cities themselves raise.
And to clarify a little bit, a private employer not contracting with the city or county in question doesn't care. They're not affected by this at all, right?
Right, right. Exactly.
But if Robco gets a city contract with one of those cities or counties to do something, then I have to observe their minimum wage ordinance.
Yeah, if the county or city is using state or federal money to pay you, yes.
So what's been the response? There's a Republican sponsor, Republican majority. Does that mean it's likely to pass?
Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't say it's likely to pass. Frankly, it's unclear where this bill is going. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss is cool on it. Of course, it would probably need his blessing to move forward. He's been very cool on it. He has suggested in the papers that, you know, lawmakers should perhaps focus more on how the state spends its money rather than local units of government. Governor Walker says it's not really on his agenda. That said, he hasn't said whether he'd vote for it or not. But at least he says it's not on his agenda.
And process wise, if you want to get something passed, you've got to get your party leadership, the majority leadership in particular, on board.
Yeah. And the governor, preferably.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got some news coming up next week. Unemployment, since the big recession, the Great Recession started in 2008, unemployment's been a big issue. Long-term employment, or unemployment especially. So you guys over in the newsroom have a lot going on with this. Give us a little taste of what's coming.
Yeah, we've been busy. The reporters here at WPR have been spending several weeks now on this series, which will be airing starting on Monday and going through Friday. And we're really going to be taking a deep dive in the issue of long-term unemployment. And when we say long-term unemployment, we mean people who have been jobless for 27 weeks or more. And this has been a big issue, you know, partly because unemployment benefits for these folks ended a few weeks ago. That was a very controversial move, or decision not to move by Congress, as the case may be, to extend those benefits. President Obama also talked about long-term unemployment in his State of the Union address. So this is an issue that's very much at the forefront of policymakers' minds.
And part of the challenge here for people in this situation, as I understand it, is that one of the reasons you might continue to be unemployed is that you're already unemployed. Companies might be less likely to hire people who are already unemployed.
Right, exactly. Studies show that companies are less likely to hire people who have been out of work for, I think it's something like a half year or longer. I don't know exactly, but that's about right. And so there are stigmas attached to being unemployed for a long period of time, especially for those employees who may be older, say 45 years and older. So this is an issue that really affects a good part of our workforce here in the state. And we'll be spending a week talking about it.
Give us a quick taste of some of these sub-issues you'll be covering next week.
Right. So Chimaine Mills on Monday will be talking about the stress and financial pressure associated with the long-term unemployment. Gilman Halstead on Tuesday is going to talk about Janesville and what's happened since the GM plant closed a few years ago. Have people found jobs down there? What jobs have they found? Moving on through the rest of the week, Patty Murray is going to be talking about the skills gap. And then we're also talking about those special challenges that older workers face.
All right, Noah, looking forward to that series. We'll have some conversations related to that as well on Central Time. Thanks for joining us.
It was good to be here. Thanks.
That was our news guy, Noah Ovshinsky, assistant news director here at WPR with his weekly roundup of state news.